Welcome to Westerns with Dad. This is Matt.
And this is Dad.
And on this episode, we will be talking about For a Few Dollars More, the second in the Man with No Name trilogy from Sergio Leone, starring Clint Eastwood and Lee Van Cleef.
More spaghetti.
Yeah, a spaghetti western. Classic example of the spaghetti western. This is actually... I think we were always planning on doing this, the Man with No Name trilogy in its entirety. We often get requests about them. This particular one is going out to Sean. Thank you very much, Sean, for requesting it. He was actually a proponent of doing as many Leone films as possible, including The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Once Upon a Time in America, and Duck, You Sucker. As we finish out this trilogy, I think we'll may have time to get to those after that. But I suppose The Good and the Bad and the Ugly will ultimately be the next Leone film we do when we do it. Probably.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Got to do that one. But today we're doing For a Few Dollars More. Thank you, Sean. If you've heard us talk about A Fistful of Dollars, I just revisited that episode. I think that we talk a little bit about how this one is underrated, the middle episode of the trilogy, or at least I do. I think it's an underrated film, and superior to the film that came before it. I think this is a better movie than A Fistful of Dollars.
And I would agree with that. I think it's better than Fistful of Dollars.
This is worth getting, like, for a big Western fan, Dad, like a huge fan of most permutations of the Western, these have never been your movies. These have never been.
I like Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I like Good and Bad, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly a lot.
That one's kind of undeniable. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And
you like Clint Eastwood too.
I like
you
Clint Eastwood.
Me...
I just you know yeah. I, you know what it is. I'm not a fan of Sergio Leone's style. I think he takes way too long on certain shots, way too many close-ups. You know, he's got to go around to every member of the band when they're laughing, right? Every member of the outlaw band has to be shown in a close-up laughing.
Well, they are definitely style over narrative. Like, these films are all about the tone and the experience of the scene in the moment rather than the story. The story is largely inconsequential.
Strangely enough, the story... The plot succeeds better in the second film than the first.
Oh, well, I totally agree. I mean, I think it's just it's barely a plot, really. I mean, it's almost just a premise. But
there is one.
There. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, Yojimbo has a plot. I think A Fistful of Dollars just didn't fully articulate itself that well in that regard. You know.
I agree.
It's attempting more plot and. And that's a bit more than it can chew on, I guess. Whereas this one is straight up like, there's a bad guy, and these two bounty hunters want to take him down, and that's the plot. That's pretty much
basically it. Well, you got the watch background with the sister, you know, the reason why Lee Van Cleef wants to take Indio down.
Yeah, which you don't find out about until the last 10 minutes.
That's right.
Yeah,
not really in it for the money on Indio.
Well, that he's interesting. Interesting character in this. I mean, he's kind of the thing that really puts it up and above for me. The presence of Lee Van Cleef. I would say that this is Lee Van Cleef's film. Of the trilogy, I think this is the one that is, like, most impressive for Lee Van Cleef's appearance. And I'm more engaged in that character than I am Eastwood in this film.
I am too.
Eastwood's great, but yeah, I agree. I mean, man.
I think Lee Van Cleef, in fact, I think this is one of his best performances.
I would have to agree with that. He's awesome in this. He's just awesome in this.
I like him in Good, the Bad, and the Ugly as well, but yeah, this is good. And, you know, it's for a guy who, it's nice to see him in a more leading role, because for years he played in Westerns as the second henchman,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he usually got killed. He got killed in High Noon. He got killed in, what was it? A couple other films I've seen.
Oh, he often dies in movies I've seen.
Right.
Playing villains.
Especially yeah. the big budget movies that he was in.
He plays the titular bad in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
That's right. Yeah, Clint Eastwood's good. Go figure.
That's a real, just a coin flip in that one.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, I would say they're different characters. These characters. I think we can revisit this when we talk about Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but my theory on this film, and I think I mentioned this in Fistful of Dollars as well, is that these characters aren't the same people necessarily. Or if they are, it kind of doesn't even matter. They're just sort of these iconic figures that have sort of blown in on the dust, almost. They're almost more mythic than they are real.
Isn't there a watch scene with the chiming watch in Good, the Bad, and the Ugly as well?
Is there? That would be interesting.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Because the character Angel Eyes that he plays in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is like nothing like this guy. It seems like he's completely different. They have a shared history, him and Eastwood, who is Blondie in Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and Manco in this.
Manco, right.
Mm-hmm. But I can't imagine that the character from this film, that ends the film the way Lee Van Cleef ends this film, goes on to become Angel Eyes. I mean, I suppose it's possible, but Colonel Mortimer, I don't know.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Very different. You know what Manco means, by the way?
No, what's Manco mean?
One-armed.
What the? Okay.
So he's using, he's got that leather thing on one arm. That he uses as his gun hand, apparently. I don't know. The guy on the commentary on the DVD I was watching was talking about it, saying that the only thing he could come up with in terms of one armed for Clint Eastwood is the fact that he wore that leather thing on one arm.
Well, they almost never call him that. I mean, he's just a.
You only hear it just, once.
Yeah, he's Clint Eastwood most of the movie. You know, he's just this. He's just this figure without a past, and that's the appeal of the man with no name, I think, is that you know almost nothing about him at any given time.
Right.
he could have just been summoned out of the air by the need of society,
Well, he's a bounty killer. Yeah. You know, he's a bounty hunter that just fades in and out wherever there's bounty to be had.
Mm-hmm. Always looking for an advantage or. A scheme or something along those lines.
Right.
He's less omnipotent and less godlike in this than he was in A Fistful of Dollars too. He's still has some elaborate ideas, still has some stuff. You do feel like in this he's more of a human being though. He's more fallible and plans might not work. I mean, of course they're going to work, but
Yeah.
It's a little more fly by the seat of his pants, even though he does occasionally have some of these God plans that come together very well. But so does Lee Van Cleef. And so does the bad guy occasionally. So, it seems a little balanced. By the way, there's like three people in this movie. That's it. I mean, there's henchmen. Three people and henchmen, basically.
Yep. Henchmen and bit part actors, old guys playing telegraphy guys, and. Speaking German, probably.
Yeah. Well, Klaus Kinski's in there.
What's that?
Klaus Kinski's in there.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. The Hunchback.
Yes. what an interesting way of making these films. These are really, really tiny budget, even for the time. Really small budget.
$600,000.
Yeah, that's remarkable. To make international cast. More. They don't record sound when they're recording film, so everyone's just speaking whatever language, and they've dubbed it into many languages after the fact.
Which is one of the things that bugs me.
Yeah, it leads to the bad ADR, additional dialogue recording, that is sort of a hallmark of the series. I think that came off better than this one than in Fistful as well. Like, they were... This is just a technically more proficient movie in every little way.
Yep, a bigger budget.
Mm-hmm. All right, that one was $200,000. Yeah. So you know, it's a cool just R-rated 70s Western. It's you know, I think again it gets a little bit passed over because the other two are more famous, but you know, this is certainly better than the first one, and I think just a really good movie on its own. I dig For a Few Dollars More immensely, and yeah, like you said, a big part of that, Lee Van Cleef.
Yep. I did like Lee Van Cleef a lot. I thought and I like Clint Eastwood too. It seemed almost like he was phoning in, dialing in his part on occasion, doing the man with no name thing.
I would say that, yeah, he's more impressive in Fistful for sure. Clint is.
Yeah.
But again, this is I think this is more Lee Van Cleef's story, Lee Van Cleef's film. Like, he's the one who has something he wants, you know, beyond just money. He's the one who has a larger purpose and a character arc, whereas kind of Clint is just along for the ride for the most part, you know. He's kind of being used as a tool between Indio and Mortimer here, you know, as often as not. And you know, he's just super competent because he's the man with no name. But his story in this, he does a lot more in the other two films, and you know, it. I don't know that lessens this, though, because he's still in the film. It's a significant amount being Clint Eastwood, you know, as this character.
Well, he ends up smelling like a rose. I mean, you know, he collects all the bounty on the entire gang, and you know, plus the money from the robbery.
Yeah, it always does tend to work out in his favor. So yeah, like, I don't know, shall we just start at the beginning and go through this
sure,
beat by beat? That is our format, I suppose.
If there is a format, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it opens with a guy wandering, you know, riding through the desert, whistling off in the distance, and then he gets shot. And then you get into the opening credits of the film. It's just sort of setting the tone, and, you know, which is that this is a Western, kind of a desolate one, and there's a lot of murder in it.
That's basically what you can expect in the next hour and a half, yeah.
I don't think we even ever know who or what this is, right? Is this guy getting shot out in the desert?
Well, the guy on the commentary said that it was Clint Eastwood shooting the guy.
You can kind
to
of...
to collect the bounty.
Imagine that, you know? Yeah. It's definitely somebody getting shot in the desert. Beyond that, I guess, yeah. Because we don't meet Clint for right away. First, we meet Lee Van Cleef, and we have a couple little vignettes of the two of them collecting bounties.
Right. Which takes, what, 25 minutes just as a kind of a backstory on these guys?
Yes. Yeah, I like that.
You do?
I do like that, yeah.
Really? Uh-huh.
It's just these opening little short films.
I don't think it needs 25 minutes to show these guys collecting bounties.
It does not for the story. It absolutely doesn't, but I find the goals and the aims of all these films, really, definitely this one, to kind of be almost procedurals about bounty hunters.
Procedurals?
Yeah, like...
How to be a bounty hunter.
Well, no, like a cop show, almost.
Bounty hunting,
you know? Like,
101.
Like, here's the murder this week. Oh, well, you know, let's analyze the crime scene analysis on us. Oh, look, fibers are leading us to this guy. Let's go question a few people. And then, it's this guy. We make an arrest. End of the episode. It's kind of just that simple, except, like, here's the bounty on this character. Here's a wanted poster for him. All right, where can I find him? Oh, he's over at the bar. Oh, okay, I'll go over to the bar, and there's a plan, and then... And, yeah, oh, it worked out in my favor. Now I'm shooting him. And I collect the bounty. You know, it's...
Yeah, yeah, it's a little formulaic, yeah.
Well, yeah, but that allows Leone to kind of create these sequences of tension or just shootout sequences. A lot of them are Lee Van Cleef or Clint Eastwood walks up to a guy and gets in their personal space and makes them uncomfortable, and then they realize they're about to kill one another, and then it happens. that tends to get repeated over and over. But, you know, I really like Leone's style of shooting those. These sort of braving sequences, you know, trying to just measuring their masculinity against one another over and over. That's sort of the main action of this movie, and I think he does those very well. I mean, you know, the close-up.
Well, he does. It's just for my own personal opinion is that he takes too long doing it.
Stylish. Great.
He's stylish.
The whole point. It's,
yeah.
It's what to enjoy about these is little bits of filmmaking, you know, finding ways to make an action movie or an action sequence all about intention and concentration and will, really. Sheer willpower basically is what Van Cleef and Eastwood both have all the time over these guys. And just they're super confident, super sure of themselves. You know, they're not going to be the one to break first.
Yep.
Now that is and pretty much completely.
Even though they get caught and beat up,
mm-hmm.
you know that it's not going to end that way.
No, of course not. I will admit that you know once this is expressed in these first two opening sequences. You kind of know everything you need to know about them. And it's sort of just a bit of a repeat of that over and over for the rest of the movie.
Well, except the thing about with the watches.
Oh, I love that, yeah.
And
uh-huh,
Mortimer's
that's true.
Sister.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really...
That's true, yeah.
You don't know, for example, I mean, you get the vignettes of the little flashbacks of Indio observing Mortimer as a young man with his, we find out later, sister.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But you don't know who that is, whether it's his wife or his sister, or you're not even sure it's Mortimer at the beginning.
No, mm-hmm. It almost doesn't make sense that it would be because the actor playing Indio is still playing Indio.
Well, plus Mortimer gets shot in that scene, and you think he's dead.
Yeah. Is that definitely Mortimer?
Oh, you just got me thinking now.
I didn't
maybe,
think that was
maybe
Mortimer.
It is her husband.
Yeah, I thought that was her
and
husband.
And so Mortimer's out for revenge for killing the husband and the sister killing herself.
Yeah, well, he's definitely out to avenge his sister's death,
right.
And I think her husband was also killed at that time.
Right, I think India. You're right. You're right. Mm-hmm. That wasn't Mortimer in that scene.
Yeah.
No, that wouldn't make sense. That,
yeah.
A little incestuous there.
Yeah. There, it's a boudoir scene. It's, I mean, yeah, that's the end of the film, by the way. That's
yeah. Okay,
we don't
we're
find
done.
That out until 10 minutes to go. but yeah, I mean, you get these two sequences of Van Cleef and Eastwood kind of just making their presence known and bullying people into giving them what they want. You know, on their way, you know, to collect wanted bounties for, you know, bad guys. Of the two, which did you prefer? They're both pretty much just straightforward, you know. Like, I think what I mentioned earlier was, like, that's like the exact story of the Lee Van Cleef one. There's a wanted guy. Where is he? The bar. Oh, okay. I'll go to the bar and kind of force him into a confrontation. And that's what happened. They have a shootout in the middle of, in the town square. Within the first 15 minutes of the movie. I think that's great, personally.
Shootout in town square. You mean where Lee Van Cleef shoots him with the rifle?
Yeah. Because
he's getting away on the horse?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's not in the bar. He's up in the bedroom, right?
Oh, well, yeah. He's in a... he's upstairs. Uh-huh. And he's in the tub, I believe.
The girl's in the tub.
The girl's in the tub, right. And he's locked himself in the brothel room and... he slides the wanted poster under the door, and the guy shoots through the door, and he can, you know, Van Cleef, of course, is moved. And he kicks open the door. The guy has escaped out the window, and he chases him into the main thoroughfare of the town. And they have a little bit of a shootout. Yeah, he shoots the horse out from under him.
This is really cool, where the guy gets on his horse and he's running away. Lee Van Cleef goes over to his horse and undoes a knot, and his whole arsenal goes down the side of his horse.
He's got
selects a rifle. Selects the appropriate rifle and shoots the horse. Which I thought was interesting to stop the guy.
Easier and you know he could have taken out the guy. You know he definitely could have taken out the guy. He's a great shot always. And all of them are, all the important characters. But he's got that fancy gun that he likes too, which is kind of like a large pistol with an attachable rifle butt to it.
Rifle butt, yeah.
I really like that.
That was cool. That was cool.
And then the other guy is like, you know, he pulls out his gun. He's shooting at him, and he just keeps missing. And Lee Van Cleef just keeps standing there waiting for the right shot. And, you know, it's the kind of ballsy thing that would only work in a movie, but it totally works.
Well, he's out of range. Guy's out of range of his pistol. Mortimer's got, you know, his arsenal.
His fancy weapons. He's getting pretty close to Mortimer. And then, you know, then he goes back, claims the bounty. And, hey, what's this next bounty? what's up with this one? Tell me about this guy. Kavanaugh, I believe, is the guy.
Kavanaugh, right.
And, oh, he's another wanted guy. I should let you know, somebody else is after him. Manco.
That's right. That's where we hear the name.
Manco. And, and then we just get basically the same sequence, but with Clint Eastwood and a slightly different version of it, which is him going into a bar, walking up to a guy playing cards. And I actually really love this, where he just walks right into the guy's personal space, you know, like inches from him, and just picks up the cards and just starts dealing hands. And everyone kind of knows something's up, so they let it play out.
Let it ride, yeah.
And
interestingly enough, no one moved away from the table.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
it's,
I mean, enigmatic. You'd think that they would assume that there's a gun battle coming, you know, and
I
move
certainly
away
assumed.
From the table.
Well, he is sort of the big badass in town, Kavanaugh, at this point, you know, unchallenged.
Right.
Yeah, they make a point of that, is that both these guys are like, oh, no one's gonna claim the bounty on that guy.
Oh, could be wrong.
And, Clint Eastwood beats this guy up, kills his crew, shoots him down. And as he's collecting money for it, he shames the sheriff for being a bad sheriff. I enjoyed that. Just
you guys need a new sheriff here in town.
And, that's the first, like, good chunk of this film, 20, 25 minutes or so.
Yep.
Then we meet the other character in the movie, the only other character, really, aside from gang members, and that is El Indio. Great introduction to this character. I love this guy. I think this is a great bad guy.
Yeah, Indio's good.
I forget the actor's name. It's like John Francis something. I don't know. He's an Italian actor.
Right. He was in Fistful of Dollars, too, wasn't he?
Yes. Nowhere near as prominently. He's like the only other guy in this. I imagine he was in a lot of these, you know. Yeah. He has the look of it, you know. He looks like a spaghetti Western character so much.
Yeah, well, watch for him in Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's... He's got sort of like this mop of gray hair. You know, he's your average bandit villain that you would... He's the platonic ideal of a bandit villain. You know, he's always kind of drunk. He's always kind of ambling around, you know. But he's also really super hyper competent. And, you know, I think is the first scene with him? Yeah, the first scene with him is... He's him punishing a guy, you know, for arresting him in the past and sending him to jail. He shows up to take his revenge on a guy. And this is our
first time we see him is when they break him out of jail, right?
Is that right?
Yeah, yes, they break him out of jail, and he shoots the old man for just being there.
Yeah. they want to punish. He wants to punish the guy who arrested him too.
Right.
And this is rough. Gets the guy, corners him in a church with his family. Drags family outside, has them killed outside, which we hear, and then pulls out his watch for the little for the watch game that Indio enjoys so much, which is he has a timepiece that plays a lullaby. He opens it, you know, and they're facing off, and when the music stops, that's when they draw, and he's like really good at this. It's a haunting little melody, really. Really great. I think this is the significant piece of music in the film, more than the main theme, which is, you know, of the Morricone themes, probably the least. The watch chime? Yeah. The watch chime, though, is great.
Yeah.
That's what I associate with this particular movie more than, you know, the Morricone overtures, which are so prominent in Good, the Bad, and the Ugly and Fistful. And it was just used, I think we mentioned last week, in the Dark Tower ad, you know, to evoke sort of the dark Western, I guess. great little piece of music that is, it's haunting and it plays many times during the film and never gets annoying, so that's good. And of course, El Indio wins this very easily. This is his thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if he couldn't win it easily, he wouldn't do it.
No, he's kind of a coward too. He's kind of a sleazebag coward guy. He has some evil plans to screw his own gang over later in the film. I
know. Yeah,
he's great. He's so good.
Well, he's got one guy that he confides in, right?
Nino. Yeah. Uh huh. The guy with the blue jacket. Right?
Blue jacket. Yep. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be a significant character for a moment there, and then he's not. And he's just another jobber henchman. Yeah. That's the first third of this movie is just little these 10-minute sequences that establish these characters.
Right.
The three main characters, and then you just sort of throw them all together. Both Menko and Mortimer see that Indio has a large bounty on him, so they are headed there. Now, speaking of Mortimer and his ulterior motive here, why is he going around killing other bounties? Is this just to collect enough?
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing. Mm-hmm. Just why does he need the money?
Yeah, he clearly doesn't care about money, based on how he behaved for the rest of the film. So what is he doing going around collecting bounties? Is that just to raise the funds to allow for him or even just practice, because he's not really a bounty hunter by trade.
Right.
I mean, I guess at this point he is. You know, he's been doing it for some time at this point.
Well, he's labeled as a bounty killer.
Yeah, uh-huh. He's certainly good at it. Yeah. So, well, anyway. They're both arriving in the town, the central town. What is the name of this place where the most of the action takes place? Because it's not...
Paso.
The towns get muddy in this one.
I don't think it's actually named, is it?
It may not be named. It's not where the bank is. It's not where they go after the bank. It's, you know, the first of a few places. But most of the film's here. Right. And they end up staying in, hotels across from each other. That's Van Cleef and Eastwood. They kind of are aware of each other peripherally right away.
Spying on each other with binoculars and a spyglass.
Eastwood finds a friendly little child to inform on him for money, things of that nature. I like the scene where he gets the hotel room that he wants a view of the street, so he just basically goes up and kicks a guy out of there. An enormous amount of this movie is just Clint Eastwood walking up to people and demanding things of them, and they acquiesce because they're scared, because he's so calm. I mean, yeah, that, and the other big part of this movie is trick shots. That's a lot of people getting the cigar shot out from in front of their lips, or
a little point off their spur.
Yeah,
that's right.
They people use guns in this movie like you know, like the way people use cell phones almost. Every scene, you know, there's like a punctuation mark of somebody shooting something off of somebody's body.
Or does Clint Eastwood ever miss away. In this film?
I don't think so.
I mean, he gets all the apples.
Yeah.
Shoots all the apples out of the tree.
That's funny. The hat.
The hat. The three guys coming in to support Kavanaugh.
Oh, he does that behind him. He's like over the back.
Yeah, he sees him in the mirror. Sees him in the mirror. Turns around and guns him and all down. Three shots.
Yeah, he's godlike. I mean, in his gunfighting ability in this, and that's always been the thing with these movies. You know, that's why he seems not like something more than human sometimes. And
I like the scene, by the way, with between Mortimer and Eastwood, the hat shooting scene.
Yeah, Where that's Mortimer, sort of their first big face-off here.
Yeah, Mortimer keeps chasing after the hat that Eastwood is shooting away from him until he gets out of range.
Yeah.
Then he gets out his handy-dandy little pistol with the stock of the rifle butt on it and takes the hat off Eastwood's head and shoots it several times before it hits the ground.
Yeah. This is great, because this is the first time, like, the whole movie, they've just been walking up to people in a calm manner and demanding things, and everyone, like, bows over for him. He's like, yeah, okay, and they try it with each other, and neither of them really want to do that.
Yeah.
They're both kind of just like, oh, yeah, okay, that's cool. Fine, how about this? How about this? And without saying anything, of course, they just, you know, use their guns for trick shots.
Their guns do their talking, yeah.
And and this is where they're kind of creating mutual respect for one another as bounty killers. it's great. This is exactly what I really responded to in this. Is just like every 10 minutes in this, there's a masculinity contest. And it's all about poise and attitude, you know, rather than it's never brute strength or force or anything.
Never
no
sheer machismo,
no huh? No one ever gets excited in this movie. Well, Indio does, but the two leads, never, you know. Even when they're getting beaten up.
I expected a little more fight back from them, but they don't.
Yeah.
They pretty much just take it.
Yeah, because they're not worried, I guess. I love in that hat shooting scene when Eastwood's hat finally hits the ground, it's like a boulder, the sound effect that they use.
Yeah.
It's like something heavy. Yeah.
What's with the sound editing people? And some of the fists fighting. Did you notice that?
It's
the sound effects
noises.
On fist fights? Yeah, it's just slap.
Yeah, the sound in this film is not it's not the greatest thing. Well, it's great. It is great. This is really fun. It's one of the things that makes the film endearing to me is that the sound's a little weird. So they come to respect each other by shooting hats, and so then they have a conversation. I mean, they both understand what's up. You know, they both, we're both here to get Indio. Well, how's that going to work if we're both trying to do it? I guess we probably should team up. Oh, that makes sense, right? You know, we can split the bounty. There's enough to go around. And that way it's 2 versus 15 instead of 1 versus 15. It increases our odds. And you can tell right away they're not really going to trust each other, but they'll work together while it's in their interests. And they know this, too.
You know what I wondered? I wondered why, I mean, if Mortimer's intent was just to get Indio, revenge on Indio, why didn't he say that? Why didn't he just tell him, I don't want the money? That would have made it a much easier deal for Eastwood to take.
Well, that is a good question. And I got to admit, I don't necessarily think that the final twist with Mortimer's secret purpose really holds water narratively. I don't think it's not a huge concern of the film, really. It's if you just
too
if that just wasn't the case. Yeah, I think so. Hmm. If he was just a bounty hunter doing another normal bounty job, all it would change is the last 10 minutes of the film. It's not something baked into the narrative or story per se. It's right. just it is in service of this watch subplot, basically. And I mean, honestly, even with that plot, it's kind of weird that he doesn't take any of the money at the end. There's so much to go around. Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, what does he make? He's like almost 50 grand off of this, right?
So just for the bounty?
Yeah.
Just for the bounty?
Yeah, all the for the whole gang.
Right.
Yeah.
Plus he's got we don't know if he's going to keep the bank money or not.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You kind of assume that he will, but the way he hangs it over the seat of the wagon.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this guy would keep that. Okay. Yeah, well, that's always his kind of thing. It's, you know, it's sort of extra legal. These scenes of these guys coming together and plotting together, they seem like, for a movie that is like over 50 years old now. Anyway, they remind me of the stuff that has been inspired by them, you know, by this film. Certainly Tarantino's westerns, you know, the two he've done, they feel very much in this world, you know, in the bounty hunter world of the spaghetti western. Certainly, you know, like these guys could be Kurt Russell and Samuel L. Jackson's. You could draw a direct line to what they're going for there. And I don't know. I feel like John Wayne didn't play a lot of bounty hunters. I feel like this is a Clint Eastwood thing that, you know, really started around here. I mean, I'm sure there's examples.
With the anti-hero, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But the change from hero to anti-hero.
Yeah, yes, definitely. But I think specifically bounty hunter became quite popular around this time with these. I don't recall a lot of bounty hunter movies from the 50s.
Remember Wanted Dead or Alive? Have you ever seen any of the old episodes, TV episodes of Wanted Dead or Alive?
No, I mean, you say that, I think of the Bon Jovi song. I don't know the...
No, it's was a show? Steve McQueen Western series.
Mm-hmm. Was it essentially he's a bounty hunter?
He's a bounty hunter.
Yeah.
But a bounty hunter with a heart of gold, right?
Uh-huh.
Because it's early 60s.
So quite literally a procedural bounty hunter show.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm sure they're not inventing the idea of the bounty hunter movie, but I don't know. This feels like the articulation of it that still resonates and inspires to this day. You know, if I see a movie that's got, you know, people, even something like a modern day version of this would be, people... What would the phrase be? Chasing bail jump runners, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
Dog the Bounty Hunter. That, you know, even Dog the Bounty Hunter. Did you ever see Dog the Bounty Hunter? It feels inspired by this somehow. It's just...
Dog Bounty Hunter?
Dog the Bounty Hunter. Yeah, it's a reality show. It's ridiculous. It's you know, it's like a big Hulk Hogan looking guy. Anyway. Okay. And yeah, so this strikes me as I mean, there's less iconic moments in this than in Fistful or Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but it feels like a very influential film anyway. It just sort of got into the DNA of the Western somehow. This story and this idea, and you know, the other ones are about bounty hunting too. But I don't know, it's formative in some way here.
Yeah, I'm not.
Or is
I'm
that
not...
a reach? Is that a reach? I don't know.
Well, I didn't feel it, but, mm-hmm. you know, I liked For a Few Dollars More because there was some kind of structure to it. More structure than in Fistful of Dollars.
That's true. It's a lot more straightforward of a narrative. I think that helps. Leone's true passion, which is creating these,
vignettes.
Yeah, this is a much easier thing to kind of hang that on. It's just a creates a series of you know, of direct confrontations.
Yep.
And yeah, I mean, the plot they come up with here is that that Eastwood's going to infiltrate the gang. He's going to join up with Indio, and Mortimer's going to be on the outside, kind of picking them off, helping when appropriate. And Eastwood will lead them into this this bank robbery, and they'll work it out together, and you know, pick them off. And and they both, you know, kind of change plans on one another throughout without telling. You know, they're kind of in it for themselves, but they're essentially working together.
Indio changes his plans too, so he,
yeah, it is. It is a 3-point story. Like, each person kind of, these three characters, the only characters really, just sort of changing and pivoting the narrative to kind of advantage themselves. And that's the main action of it. But it's really just a simple story, which is Indio is plotting a bank robbery, and these guys are trying to collect the bounty on him. And that's it. we do get a scene with Indio explaining his plan here, back in the church.
Right.
He tells a story. I love this scene, by the way. This is a really well-performed monologue about the carpenter that he shared a cell with.
Right.
Who is familiar with this kind of safe, this sort of hidden safe, you know, that is separate from the safe for show they put in banks. This is like a, looks more like a cabinet, but it's actually a really complicated super safe. And now Indio knows about it because this cellmate told him about it back in the day, or not back in the day, where he was when the movie started, but,
right.
But yeah, so that's basically setting it up, is like they want to get this secret safe. And
just occurred to me, the guy that he shot,
yeah,
when they broke him out, was the carpenter.
Yeah, it wasn't so good for this carpenter to know this. Yeah.
But for some reason, that didn't dawn on me.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it is still killing him just out of pure meanness.
Yeah.
There's no reason to kill that guy other than just, you know something. Bah. So the way that that Manco is going to ingratiate himself with this gang is that he is going to break out somebody that knows him, like a friend of Indio's. He's going to break him out of prison, Alamogordo prison, and then use that guy as sort of an introduction to Indio. And this actually happens very quickly. You know, we don't get to really meet this guy that he breaks out of prison. He just breaks a guy out by dynamiting a wall, and they ride straight to Indio. And they ask, immediately they ask Manco the obvious question, which is, why should I trust you? What do you want? And what do you think of this response?
He says, well, yeah, what was it? You guys, there's a lot of bounty on you guys. I might just feel like turning you in.
Yeah.
And that's the one answer. Like, that's the one answer that he would accept.
Why? Why? Like, everyone in the gang is just like, oh, are we about to shoot this guy? And Indio's like, ha, ha, that's the only thing you could have said I would have believed. And it's just like, he puts his hand on his shoulder. It's like, yeah, if you believe him, what are you doing? And in fact, he does see through it. He's like, oh, he wouldn't say that unless he were actually a bounty hunter. That we find out later that he was.
That's right. He knew from the start. Yeah.
So this is a horrible plan, right?
Well, he's planning on Eastwood getting killed in that fake robbery that's supposed to happen in Santa Cruz, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. He's planning on something happening to Eastwood in that.
Right. I guess. Maybe. I mean, he sends him out with, what, four guys? Three or four
three,
guys?
Three guys.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Although, I mean, it seems like Clint's whole plan in this, and all of these, really, is just create chaos and sort of thrive in the margins there. You know?
Yeah.
Create advantage by chaos. And
killing guys, yeah.
Yeah, killing people when it's unexpected. it's Van Cleef is kind of using him at this point. Like, he could just get killed very easily. He's gambling with his life. I think Van Cleef fulfills a more heroic role in this than Eastwood, in that he has purpose. But he's still, you know, he's still an anti-hero. He's still a kind of a not entirely sympathetic guy all the time.
No, he's a gunman.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I
wonder about that relationship between Mortimer and Eastwood, and why Eastwood just moves into that role. I mean, it was explained briefly that, okay, Eastwood had to be the inside man because they didn't recognize him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whereas Mortimer had already been recognized by Klaus Kinski, the Hunchback.
Right.
In that scene in the bar earlier in the movie. So,
how do we skip that? Yeah, that's a great scene. Well, I mean, again, it's just another masculinity challenge, but it's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I expected gunplay right there, but no, it didn't happen then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, well, but you know, Eastwood kind of assumes that role, but like you said earlier, they must be super confident, you know,
mm-hmm.
lots of self-confidence in their own ability to get out of jams, to see what's coming, you know, and I wondered why Eastwood would accept the role so easily. But that must be it.
Or maybe there's something else to it. Maybe they are psychotic, just death-worshipping fatalists, and they don't care whether they live or die. Like, could be my minute any time. Who cares? Bring it on. That would be totally out of character.
That would be the ultimate buddy movie, right?
Yeah, it's like Lethal Weapon. Like Lethal Weapon, but with two Mel Gibsons. It's
Lethal Weapon, there it is again.
Influenced greatly by the Western Lethal Weapon.
Yes.
Now, one thing that surprised me in this is that Clint never tries to screw over Lee Van Cleef for the most part. Like,
well, yeah, he does when he tells India to go the opposite direction of the one
oh, that's
Lee
right.
Cleef
that's
suggested.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. He's breaking with plans because it's his nature, you know, kind of.
Well, he wants
Lee
to
Van
do it
Cleef
kind
of foresees it anyway. this is the scene where they're shooting the apples out of the tree, right?
Just after that, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's a fun. It's just more trick shoots. It's.
And Lee Van Cleef reveals that he knows Eastwood's M.O.
Mm-hmm.
He knows he's going to cheat on him.
That really demanded that I know you knew I was going to cheat.
I know, but I know that you knew that I knew.
Yeah, I needed some of that, I think. So they end up just getting the safe at this point. They pull off the robbery pretty quickly. But they can't get into the trick safe. That's not much of a scene where they actually pull this off, is there?
No, that happened pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And, of course, the guard has to lose his life, but...
Yeah. And then Lee Van Cleef kind of presents himself to the gang, you know?
As someone who can open up the safe.
Yes, uh-huh. And he's like, I'll crack that safe for you. Otherwise, you'll have to blow it up. Burn a lot of banknotes. I can do it for nothing. Well, no, he can do it for $5,000. But and then,
but so, nothing will happen to the money.
Well, yeah, exactly. And this is this creates sort of the tension of the rest of the film, which is that, oh well, we have a lot of eyes on us now. We can't spend any of this money. You'll have to wait in this room for 1 month. And none of us can leave this town. And then at the end of that month, I'll give you all your money. Well, you know, what a situation. What? Like, that's not going to work.
No.
You'd think that
more of the gang members would have seen through that. But
yeah, I mean...
Only one of them did.
They all do, really, I think. Like, I think the gang assumes we're going to screw these guys over. Lee Van Cleef and Eastwood certainly know they're going to get screwed over on this, but they, you know, they take it in stride because they're going to let it play out. And it's like, ha, the month will go fast. No problem. Mm-hmm. It's just an untrustworthy situation in all regards. they are immediately spying on that money too. Like, yeah. This is great. The I think the next scene is where they get caught spying off of the money, right?
They get the money out of the box.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Indio had taken it out of the safe and had put it in a cash box with the padlock on it. Well, you know, Mortimer can get into places with locks.
Right.
No problem. So he gets the money out, puts it in saddlebags,
mm-hmm.
or some large saddlebags, anyway.
And again, if his reason to be here is to kill Indio,
why would he worry about the money?
What's he doing here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Or maybe this is all part of the plan. I wouldn't put it past these characters to be thinking, you know, like 5 steps ahead, with their, you know, with their fatalistic death worshipping ways. You know, they're just like, you know, just large all or nothing poker bets. You know, that's how you win poker, is you minimize the actual number of bets you have to take. You just do like 12 big bets basically, and do it quick. And that's the move they make here.
Yep. Well, could be.
They get caught at this point. They get apprehended by the gang for spying, for trying to steal his money, this actually follows the narrative beats of A Fistful of Dollars quite a bit. A lot of the action and the scenes look a lot like that. This is the part where the gang, you know, 2/3 of the way in, the gang wises to who they are. And they catch him, start beating him up, basically.
Right. but just as they're getting caught, Eastwood tosses all the money into a tree.
Right. Yeah. they get beaten and, you know, chained up in a shed or something like that, and left in there for the night. We'll figure out how we're gonna kill him later.
Then, and this is where Indio takes over now.
Yeah, then Indio starts moving his own plans at this point. He sends Nino, the blue-coated guy from before, he sends him in there to free both of them. And it's a very surprising moment. It's like, what's going on here? Why is this guy all of a sudden important? And then once they get out of there, you find out, like, oh, Indio told him to do that. To kill one of his own guys, as a matter of fact.
Right.
Yeah. And then another guy who they killed to kind of pin it on. I love that. That was great. The after they escape, yeah, they bring the guy in and is like, hey, you know, they escaped. And they found your gun there. And he's like, there's a lot of reasons that could be. He's like, yeah, how are you going to prove those? Then he just has to run, and they shoot him down as he's running.
They found his knife in one of the other gang members, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just a big double screw over his whole gang, you know? Is this just a less mouths to feed kind of thing?
That's what it is.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's what he tells Nino, anyway. It's going to be down to those two, Nino, his buddy Nino, and him.
Yeah.
To share all that money. But, you know, I thought it was pretty strange that after Nino gets killed, mm-hmm. Well, go ahead. Let's go ahead with the story, and we'll talk about that later.
I mean, it happens like almost right away. You know,
because he shoots the guy who's trying to get away.
Yeah,
and then the shots bring out the rest of the gang, and he says, "I want those bounty killers. They killed Cuchillo, the guy that he had just killed."
Mm-hmm.
Right, and they all fall for it, and they all go out riding out to get the bounty killers, the escaped Eastwood and Mortimer. And that leaves one guy left who's a little skeptical.
Yeah.
Who heads out, seemingly heads out to go after the bounty killers, but comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Nino gets it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I thought for a second here Nino was going to be an important character. Nope. This is... I mean, this is no honor among thieves, basically. You know, this is, you know, none of these guys can really trust each other. You know, their whole operation is based on flimsy ground. You know, it's
there's not a whole lot of
sand eroding underneath them always. Yeah. And yeah, this is a lot of fun. All these, you know, double and triple crosses and stuff. A hallmark of the spaghetti western, to be sure. And again, I just love Indio in this. I mean, I would say Lee Van Cleef is the performance of the film, but all three of these guys are great, and Indio's right there with them. He's just a decadent madman throughout. He's, you know, he's a crazy guy. It's really fun. I like this kind of villain, you know? Like, he has plots and schemes, but mostly he's just nuts. And yeah, and a sensualist, too. He's just gross. He's just... He enjoys eating and drinking and just rousing, you know, and just running around being nuts. He's way cool. yeah. And then I guess this is it. Now it's just like, okay, everyone for themselves kind of thing. there's going to be a big shootout in this Pueblo style town. You know, this is the whole town becomes a shooting gallery, as it does often in a Western. This is, you know, this is how these movies end, certainly. And, right. Yeah, it's great. Can you see a bit of modernity in the background and around this particular town, by the way? I couldn't quite tell. It seemed like a lot of roads, maybe some paved roads in the back, and some.
I didn't notice any paved roads, but
some gas stations. I'm not.
Yeah, sure. No, I didn't see any gas stations. Did you really? You saw a gas station?
I couldn't tell for sure, and I didn't go back to double check it. But I was thinking that doesn't quite look like what I would imagine. You know, maybe I'm just wrong on that. You know, Indio's kind of being drunk, and you know. You know, playing with his watch. And who is it asks him about the watch?
The skeptical guy from the gang, I can't remember his name. Mm-hmm. The one that comes back and kills Indio, or kills Nino.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then
I always wondered what that watch meant to you.
Then he takes Indio's gun away, and they go after the money, but they open the cash box and nothing's there except the bounty poster.
Yeah, right. And Indio does one of his evil
laughs. Out and starts going into
crazy laugh.
Yeah, that's right. And the gang member freaks out and starts looking for the money. Mm-hmm. And you know, like breaking up baskets of seed and all kinds of stuff, flour and generally wrecking
that's
the
really
place
great,
looking
yeah.
for that.
That's really terrific. Uh-huh. Maybe it's in this thing. Maybe it's in this thing. Well, it's not here. Yeah. And Indio, of course, being a madman, is just like, whatever, man. Yeah, we're living it now.
And tries to make a deal with him, mm-hmm. right? And actually does make a deal. He ends up giving him his gun back when they realize that the bounty killers haven't left town.
Yeah, bad plan, Indio. Gotta say, not the best plan. The way you played all this, not terrific. We get the backstory of the watch with the lullaby, and I was surprised. we talked about this earlier. It's something he remembers from when he killed a guy and raped the guy's wife. That was what was going on.
Right.
And while the woman was being raped, she pulled out a gun and shot herself rather than live with it. I was surprised she didn't shoot him, and I think he was surprised too, which is why the watch has special meaning. It's like, hey, it's that one time that girl could have killed me and killed herself, I suppose, is why it sort of haunts him. Like, it's...
Like
it's,
she would rather be dead than be... Yeah. Subjugated by this guy.
Mm-hmm. It's a creepy little scene. It kind of like it's like, oh, ooh, this is a this is pretty serious and dark for a very late reveal in the film. But it, of course, it is Lee Van Cleef's sister, as right. it turns out, because they both have the watch, and yeah, it's and that in becomes apparent immediately. And yeah, and after killing the rest of the gang, you know, in a series of, I would say, a pretty standard
shootout
in the gallery. Nothing too remarkable there. We do get to the big finale, which is the Lee Van Cleef versus Indio shootout, and where he finds him at a disadvantage, and decides he's going to do the watch game, and I believe his fancy rifle is on the ground in front of him. You know, it's like, hey, when the timer goes out, you go for it. Yeah, uh-huh. So he's got no shot, really, because Indio's just as good, you know. And so it's a standard Leone kind of face-off, which is a bunch of close-ups. Yeah,
and then second watch.
Yep. As the music stops, Clint Eastwood shows up playing the other watch. I don't know why this screws up Indio so much. But it does. I guess because Eastwood has the drop on him. He's got a gun. And
oh, yeah. He's got a rifle trained on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so he's like, oh, okay. Well, we'll do it for real now. Here, how about you use this gun? He gives Lee Van Cleef a gun. So they're on equal footing for it. Well, and he's going to stay out of it, Eastwood. Because he knows. How does he know?
That, well, because Mortimer told him he wanted Indio.
That's right.
That he wanted to take care of Indio.
Would you mind if I had Indio? I want to kill Indio. Yeah. And yeah. And so then, basically, they do it again. They do the face-off while the music counts down again. He's great. This is great. This is exactly how a spaghetti western is supposed to end. It's awesome. A lot of close-ups. The music's cool, you know, all very intentional, and yeah, it's a revenge.
The whistling
movie
did.
After
wait
all.
A minute, I gotta ask. Didn't the whistling get to you after a while?
No, nope.
Really?
Not at all. No. Mm-mm.
Got to me.
You even get a fly on climbing on guys.
I can't whistle.
You can whistle. So yeah, so Lee Van Cleef wins. again, yep. Proving that this is kind of his movie more than it is Eastwood's, I would say. Eastwood is certainly, you know, cutting a strong, iconic figure, and he's present and he's doing as much as Lee Van Cleef. But the, you know, the narrative kind of is more about Lee Van Cleef getting revenge and, you know, finally taken out Indio. And because it turns out that's all he really wanted, he gives Eastwood the entire bounty and just rides off. And they, you know, they have an understanding. And hey, we work together this time. Yeah. All right. Catch you later. and yeah, he, this is great. He's loading up all the money. Or no, he's loading up all the corpses into the... into a cart,
right?
And he's just like, wait, I'm missing something. And the last guy pops up, and Eastwood spins around and just burns
nails
him down.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And
my adding was correct after all.
Mortimer comes over and is like, you need anything? No, I just got my math wrong. It's all worked out now. And yeah, just straight off, ride out into the sunset. Catch you next time, partner.
That's it. Eastwood takes off in the wagon to go turn in the bounty. Et voila.
So, yeah, they both got what they wanted, and that's it for a few dollars more. I love this, Dad. I think this is great. I really enjoy this film. I think it's. Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is the better film. I'm sure. I like it about as much as this. I mean, I think that this is a—it's a tighter film, you know. It's almost an hour shorter than that, and Yeah, it's just good. It's just I like Indio very much. I like Lee Van Cleef very much, and Clint Eastwood is great too. You know, it's like all the good things about Fistful of Dollars, but a lot more straightforward in the story, a lot better told, and you have these two other really good performances in it as well, and no one else to really worry about. I like it a lot.
Well, I can't refute you on most of that. It's just that. Spaghetti Westerns just kind of wear on me a little bit. I can't stand the dubbing.
Yeah.
That drives me nuts. The sound editing.
I think it's better in this than it is in Fistful, I would say. Or maybe
a little bit. A little bit. The old codgers they bring in for those bit parts, you know, they're obviously speaking some weird Eastern European language or something.
Yeah, and then, you know, you got like a Gabby Hayes going, oh, yeah, well, I live here because of the train. Oh, that's a good scene we didn't talk about, by the way. The guy who lives under the train, like the train.
That's right.
The railroad company wanted to kick him off his land, and he like refused and he was a real huffy about it, and they were going to buy him out, and he was like, never, no, no. And so they just built the train there anyway, and every time a train arrives, his house vibrates and all his things fall down, and he's just like, yeah, I won.
I don't know. I like the film. It's not a film I would watch over and over again, like I would say The Searchers or, you know, Tombstone or, you know, one of those.
Yeah. Okay.
All time greats, but
I've seen it a number of times now. I've realized. I do keep coming back to it for a few dollars more. I've seen it more than I've seen Fistful for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good. And I would almost say a better entry point than Fistful of Dollars. I would say just go straight to this one.
Huh. Yeah. Well, I'd agree with that. Because I like it better than Fistful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Lee Van Cleef, as you said, maybe the best Lee Van Cleef performance you can just point out. You know, yeah, he's the guy in this. And what a good actor. God, I enjoy Lee Van Cleef. He shows up in a lot of these. He's great every time. You know, he's got that Lee Marvin thing, you know?
What thing?
He's got kind of a Lee Marvin thing going.
Yes, in fact, they were considering Lee Marvin for that part.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
And
I saw they were considering Bronson.
Yeah, it was Sergio Leone that just liked the way Lee Van Cleef looked.
Yeah, he's great. This movie makes Lee Van Cleef, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, he's pretty great in Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, too. But, you know, I don't know. This is the Lee Van Cleef performance that I love, I think. This is probably my favorite thing he's done, too, yeah. I saw they wanted Bronson, who they originally wanted to play the Eastwood role in Fistful. And he turned him down again.
Wow.
Yeah. Bronson.
Well, they wanted Bronson for the Eastwood role?
In Fistful, they wanted Bronson to play the Eastwood role, yeah. He turned him down. Because he's like, I'm not going to Italy for months for no money, in a way. Well,
and then they offered him a job in for a few dollars more as well?
Yes, they offered him Mortimer. He turned him down again.
He just wasn't into spaghetti westerns, huh?
Yeah, I guess not.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a huge western guy, really, is he, Bronson?
Well, he did three or four. I mean,
he did
Chato's,
his share, but
Chato's
he was
Land.
More
he did
more cop guy. He's
Breakheart Pass.
He's one of the Magnificent Seven.
One of the Magnificent Seven. That's right.
Yeah. So I don't know. Are we winning you over at all on Spaghetti Westerns, Dad?
I like this film. It's not that I don't like it. It's just that I like other types of films more. I'm not as huge a Sergio Leone fan as you are.
Does it have to do, do you think, with the lack of narrative? I mean, it's very much
maybe.
It's style, and you know, and poise, and attitude
and maybe a little of that goes a long way with me.
Mm-hmm. Now that makes sense, of course. Uh-huh. I enjoy it very much. I like that stuff a lot, and I there's something kind of pure about it for me, and it's just it's like a filmmaking exercise in a way. And I find that interesting, and I just love these guys at the height of their power, you know, Eastwood and Van Cleef. And
well, I can appreciate the performances. There's no question about it. And I'm, you know, you being in acting and, you know, having studied drama and sort of a film critic in your own way, you know, I can see how you would you know, come to these conclusions and everything, and that and how the style of the movie is almost as important as the, you know, the structure, the plot structure and everything else. For me, I love great performances. I think that's first and foremost. I love great performances.
Yeah.
After that, I got to have a plot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I certainly like a plot. I appreciate it when it's there. I don't need it if it has other things that are on point, you know, in a way that I'm happy with. And and I would say that this movie has that going for it. It's the most standard of bounty hunter plots you can imagine, but yeah, it's all about you know, like how we shoot this showdown, how we you know, how Clint Eastwood moves, you know, how he interacts with this guy that he wants something from, you know, that's right. The interest of it, the fun for me, you know. And that's always one of the best thing in any Western, really, is the attitude that, you know, the
yeah, as long as it's not overdone. And and you know, I think, you know, I always complain about Sergio Leone and the fly crawling across the guy's face and all that stuff, and and multiple close-ups of guys who have no lines whatsoever except laughing.
There's certainly a lot of mad dog killers in Leone, aren't there? There's a lot of guys, that are just like, I have no purpose but to be killed. And I, you know, the music helps so much in that regard. I think the Morricone
does a great job with those movies. He really does.
Those raise the, you know, they heighten the moment in such a way that, you know, that it feels like the most important moment ever. You know, every one of those face off, you know, all that. So great. I mean, the most.
I love the soundtrack with the unintelligible chorus.
We can fight.
We can fight.
This is great podcasting.
Right? They could be saying Lee Van Cleef, you know. I mean, Lee Van Cleef.
Lee Van Cleef. Oh, we're having fun. Okay. 4 stars for me. 4 out of 5.
I'd give it 3.5.
Okay. We're closer than I thought we'd be. That's good. Yeah. Well, it's a good movie. It's just a really good movie. Yeah.
It is a good movie. It's a good movie. I'm not saying it's not a good movie. I'm saying that it's not my full cup of tea.
And that's fair. Mm-hmm. We will do Good, the Bad, and the Ugly one of these days. I don't know. Maybe in the fall or something like that. We'll figure it out. It'll happen. And right. And more Leone besides. I'm gonna make it happen, Dad. I'm sorry.
That's fine. I like Good, Bad, and the Ugly. That's it. Which is strange because it's a lot longer movie.
It's very long. It's just kind of awesome and undeniable in that that great iconic Western way, man. There's so much in that, and Eli Wallach's great, and it's
Eli Wallach is terrific.
Yeah,
great actor. I never thought Eli Wallach got his due.
Well, you know, he had a huge Hollywood career for 40 years. Appeared in a lot of great movies.
But never got the accolades that a lot of guys do, I don't think.
Well, yeah, that could be fair. I mean, I think I'm mentioned in this every time he shows up, I'm just like, I can't believe he's just like just some Jewish guy from New York. He's so mutable, racially, you know, like he seems like a Mexican,
no problem.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. And he's really something in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And we will talk about that at some point in the future. For now, I believe that is it for the spaghetti Western at this point. We'll be back though. What else have you seen of late, Dad? Have you gone to any movies or seen anything at home?
I hate to report, not much. I mean, I've been really busy lately with school and pétanque and everything.
Yeah, pétanque tournament.
Pétanque. Yeah, it's kind of like French version of bocce ball.
And you're doing good now. We were just talking about this before the show.
We're doing well. We're doing well in league play. Yeah, we're in first place.
Man, I love that. I love it. And you have a guy coming over today to resurface the bocce court in your backyard. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah,
that's great. It's great. I saw the new Alien film Alien Covenant, the sixth film in the series.
Ridley Scott?
Yes, Ridley Scott's third film in the series. It is the it's the sixth Alien film, but the second in the new Prometheus series, which is it's a little complicated. Which is more about well, the originals are just sort of unknown space horror. You know, they each have kind of their own tonality, but basically, you know, it's monsters in space, and you know, how are you going to deal with them? Whoa, they have these weird life cycles. This new series is more kind of like science fiction, hard sci-fi. That's probably not right, but it's more concerned with the science fiction thematics than the horror movie aspects. I mean, it certainly has those. But it's more about like, what if you know, what is our purpose in this world? What if we were created? What if we were, you know, by another species, by aliens? What if we are in fact sort of the Frankenstein monster to creators that don't really, that are not divine, that are not that had no purpose for us necessarily, and. And that we'll never fully understand, like you know, the supposition being, you know, in a universe without a god, we are is it even possible to have purpose? And also a lot of murders by alien, and they're super violent, super stylish, and there's another aspect to it, which is that that mankind in turn creates androids, artificial intelligence, robot life, that will then rise up to take us down in the way that we rise up to take down our progenitor. It's like just Frankenstein getting retold over and over ad infinitum across the universe forever. It's kind of what it is. And, you know, as such, they are messy. They are, you know, they're not perfect in any way. They're very sloppy films in a lot of regards. They're also very beautiful films, really good-looking, stylish, like a spaghetti western, I suppose, in that sense. Ridley Scott knows how to do a sequence. You know, he knows how to put together an action sequence or a monster attack, or you know, he's just good at that. He's a good filmmaker in that way. Shoots well. They're fun. They're fun and interesting. And I mean, this new one is. It feels like everyone I've talked to about it, it's all over the board on it, on how good it is. You know, you wouldn't like these, Dad. You...
I liked Alien a lot.
Alien is a masterpiece. You've seen Aliens too, I'm sure, right? The sequel. So the sequel. That one's good too. After that, you know, it's diminishing kind of returns down. Unless you buy all in, I would say.
Right.
The new one, Prometheus, is the first of the new series, and then this new one, Alien Covenant, is the direct sequel to that. They both have Michael Fassbender in prominent roles. He's a robot in them. He's great. But yeah, I mean, you have to be all in on these because they're weird. They're really violent and they're sloppy. I mean, the first one, Prometheus, is probably a bad film, frankly. I just like it anyway. I mean, you know.
Well, there are a lot of guilty pleasures like that.
They might actually be guilty pleasures, which is weird for films that are so thematically minded. But yeah, that's what they are. anyway, that's what I saw recently. Next time we do this show, a little less than a couple weeks now, because this one's coming out a little late, I think. We will be talking about Ride the High Country, which is going to be the second Randolph Scott film that we talk about, but the first Sam Peckinpah that we've talked about. This is a request from one of our listeners. I've never seen it myself. I know almost nothing about it. You know it, Dad. It's a good one, right?
Good movie. It's a good movie. Yeah, so, a lot of people think it's Randolph Scott's best.
Oh, that's good. I'm excited to watch this then. I'm excited for the Peckinpah, too. Joel McRae is in it as well. I don't believe we've spoken about him yet. He's a Western actor. So that's going to be the next one, Ride the High Country. Thank you very much for listening to us. Anything else you'd like to add, Dan?
Just adios, amigos.
Oh, no, not yet. Not yet.
Not yet?
No, I got to say, go to our website, westernswithdad.com. Listen to us from iTunes and also leave reviews and ratings for us on iTunes. It helps the visibility of the podcast. Also, you can email us, westernswithdad@gmail.com. And you can request films you'd like to see. We have a bit of a backlog of that now, but also we'll take more always, creating a lot of interesting interesting new films that we're going to be introducing ourselves to in the coming months. Also, this is something I want to try. It's something I'm going to ask, see if people have any questions that you would like us to address on the air. You know, like any Western-related questions that you want us to talk about, hey, send those in. We'll give this a shot. See if there's anything you want us to... A topic of conversation, please request that as well. And,
Good idea.
Yeah, that's it for us now. Next week, ride the high country.
All right. Adios, amigos.